this over to Melissa.
This is something Patty drafted in anticipation of including it with our official budget request, which is due on September 1st. And we propose it for your review this month in case you have any edits or you want to see something different next month when we bring you the full budget to approve and authorize us to send to the Office of Strategic Planning and Budgeting. This, of course, is prompted by the recent legislation that changes the board composition and requests that we have the authority to use our savings to pay those individuals we might need to supply any new board, which will be dominated by lay people with the subject matter expertise necessary to make the sorts of decisions that currently come before this board. So hopefully you've had a chance to review it. I'll defer to Patty if you have any specific questions or if you want to make any suggestions or modifications to the document.
I just kind of want to put in that we need to be very careful that we don't lose our volunteers with something
right.
like this. So the way I've written it up is very much separating out what our volunteers do as assessors and EAC members and some roles people would take that we may need to pay for that don't fall into traditional volunteer roles. So for right now, most of our application reviews are done by board members, or we have one volunteer engineer who does most of them. And because it's a limited number of people and people with specific expertise related to the laws that the board regulates, we don't really want to put it out to a broad volunteer base, or you're going to have judgments become skewed on whether or not education qualifies or experience qualifies. So at some point, we're going to see 390 engineer applications all to be reviewed by one engineer, which is obviously not viable. We do have a volunteer right now, but he may not be a volunteer next year. So that's one section. The next, probably, I think Doug Parlin looked at this and thought maybe 10 to 12 times a year, you may have a case that goes through the assessors, through the EAC, comes to the board about a case that's very technical, requires very specific technical knowledge and skill to understand what the issues are. And we've actually seen a couple of times where people skip the EAC, so it gets to you, and the EAC never saw the details that you see, but now you're lacking the input from the EAC on those details. So you're possibly somebody who would, after the assessment, after the EAC, look at everything when it comes to the board, be here and be available so that people could say you're a civil engineer or you're an electrical engineer or you're an architect who specializes in this area. What can you tell us about this? And then the third would be a new thing, somebody to help with triage. Doug Parlin does a great job on triaging complaints that come in. Is it under the board's jurisdiction? If the allegations are true, would it even violate the law? We're not going to open a complaint on that. Do we have enough evidence to even open a complaint? We'll get anonymous complaints and we don't know what to do with them. But every now and then we get something where Melissa and Doug and I sit around going, I don't know. Is it a complaint? Is it not a complaint? And maybe having a professional that we could go to and say, do you think this person was practicing architect without a license, or is this just a designer working within their exemption?
Right. We normally bring those cases to you for guidance, but you're not going to be available to us.
Well, it may not even have to get to the point of coming to you if somebody can say this really doesn't fall under the board. So those are the three things we're looking at. We need to know your concerns. Will we alienate our volunteers at some level? Do you want us to go down this road? It would probably be 50 to 60,000 would be what we would ask him for a pot of money to look at.
Hey, Patty?
Yeah.
I apologize. I have to sign off for a 1:30 meeting, but my two cents on it is I support this, but I think we need to be careful to make sure it's related to the bill. I, for instance, don't see how, the volunteer leaving would change things, because, if they left now, we would have the same issue.
Right.
So I understand, for instance, having someone give the board advice, technical advice when it comes to the board makes sense. the triage, Mr. Parlin does a great job. Why would he not be continuing to do that? So I would just want to make sure that it lines up closely with what's changing with the board, not and not make it seem like we're inflating our budget. So that's all.
So maybe keep it to the application review if we lose volunteers and the appearance at the board meeting to give technical advice.
Well, I kind of like the idea.
Yeah, but I think that's if you... Okay.
I'm going to lobby for keeping the guidance, because we do bring cases to you, not a lot, but maybe one or two, a board meeting agenda where we're like, do we open it? Do we investigate? Do we dismiss it? And it's based on your subject matter expertise at the board level being able to say no or yes. So that is not going to be available to us anymore, really. I mean, it will be for landscape architects and geologists, assuming Jack and Steve get to stay.
And land surveyors.
And land surveyors, true. And Carmen can look at an architecture case, but there might be more than one architecture case or in an area she doesn't feel comfortable offering an opinion about. And then, you know, an engineer in one specialty may be terrific in that specialty, but may not really be able to provide guidance about civil cases or structural cases, you know, that sort of thing. So that was my thought. Put in as much as we can to justify making the request as it relates to the bill and the change in board composition.
Melissa, I think it's just a slight tweak of wording so that it's more clear that we're not adding positions that we don't have now, or do you know what I mean? Just
right.
Make it super clear that this is a one-for-one replacement of expertise we're losing.
Okay.
And for me, I volunteer on other boards. I a small stipend for volunteers is not, I think, I don't think there's any volunteer that'll turn his nose up at a small thank you stipend.
Right.
So I don't think we're going to alienate anybody who's volunteered necessarily.
We've got a lot of EAC volunteers on the agenda, and that's a pool of technical talent that you should literally dip into.
Right. Yep.
So is it a case that are we eliminating our EAC volunteers?
That's the concern if we put this request in.
I got it now.
Yeah. Because we're not paying the EAC members, you know, as board members, you qualify for that grand $30 a day for reviewing applications and preparing for board meetings. But, you know.
Yeah, we don't want to lose our assessor and EAC volunteers.
No.
Because that would become, that's kind of like the entire understructure.
But if you have access to an EAC that has a specific technical,
right.
You could pay them.
Right. So if the case
for that one particular
right. So that's the thought. And again, it's just a request. It may not get granted, and we'll be able to assess, you know, in the coming year, how that will or won't affect, you know, board operations.
I wonder if, and correct me, I wonder if we limit it to, like, testimony at hearings or testimony, do you know what I mean? Like, not, I wonder if there's a way to subdivide what is volunteering versus what is more, like, expert testimony where you would expect to receive a stipend.
Yeah, that would kind of fall in that middle ground, the board review of investigations. That person would be at a board meeting having looked at the whole case to provide expert testimony. If the board says we need somebody who can really tell us about mechanical engineering and there's no mechanical engineer on the board, that's where this person would fit in.
Well,
okay.
How about if we flesh it out a little based on your comments, and then you'll get another month, next month, to look at it again before we submit it.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Okay. Thank you.
We will move on from 8A3. Thank you for the work on that, too. I think it's important to really address this, you know, before the changes happen.
Yep.
So we'll move on to 8A4, discussion of extensions of professional exams due to COVID.
This is a quick one for you guys. Our rules right now is we authorize applicants to take a pass an exam within a year, but then COVID came. So people are asking for extensions. I just want a set time frame. I think 3 months would be sufficient, considering that's almost the exact amount of time these have been shut down, the testing centers have. However, NCARB is offering 9 months extension to the rolling clock. So I just wanted to bring that up because people are asking me for 9 months. And so I want to bring it to the board so I can give a uniform answer to every profession.
Now, Rob, is this has to do with the law that says people have to take and pass the exam within the first year after it's approved?
After it's approved.
So keep in mind you're looking at something that's in law, that they have to take and pass the first exam within 1 year. But because that first exam isn't being given, do we give time?
Have we had anybody applying under the governor's, like, waiver of testing for architects?
No, not for architects.
We've had a couple home inspectors.
Well,
I would be done long we get them. This is extenuating circumstances. I know a lot of people are upset that they can't go on their exams right now.
The test centers are open, though.
They are?
Yeah.
Yeah, they just couldn't start right away taking the test to meet that 1 year requirement.
They're not remote tests, though.
No, you have to go to a center.
Yeah.
That's the issue.
But they're supposedly compliant with all the CDC guidelines now and how they are providing the exams to those who are scheduled.
Do we have a problem with it? Are we experiencing a problem, or are we just forecasting?
How many are we?
I've received maybe 4 or 5 calls asking for extensions. Their time is not up yet, but they lost out on 3 months. So I want to give everyone a uniform answer here. And
if there's not going to be a big rush, I mean, what's the big deal of putting 5 names on a list, putting it on the agenda and saying approve these guys for an extension due to COVID?
That's a good point. Let's do that.
Case by case basis.
Yeah.
I mean, just group them all together.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
Agreed. Yeah, group them all.
Because
yeah.
We don't know how long COVID's going to last.
Right.
I mean, it could go forever.
Well, but we know when the exams started again.
Right, and you know, there are always people who procrastinate in taking the test, and this is a perfect excuse. So I like your suggestion of just putting them on an agenda and let them come and voice their concerns to the board for consideration.
Yeah.
Okay. When if a year from now we have somebody with a pre-existing condition,
well, then
I would definitely be inclined to waive whatever time period.
Right. So on a case-by-case basis, I think that's a very good suggestion. Thank you.
Okay.
We will move on to 9, director's report.
Okay, in the interest of brevity, as I channel JMAD, the only thing I want to mention about the budget is that Patty and I did listen into an OSPB meeting that talked about the governor's budget and what we can expect. Clearly, they passed a skinny budget for this fiscal year, and they are anticipating $190 million shortfall with a possible $518 million shortfall projected in later this year. They're trying to use the money they get from the feds to pay for some of this shortfall, as they call it, but they consider that Arizona is in a recession, but they don't know how bad it is yet as a result of COVID. So they have announced that they want all budget requests for the coming fiscal year to be on hold as they relate to the general fund. That clearly is not us. We have our own fund, but they will be looking to streamline everybody, and what they're hoping is that they can use some of that rainy day fund that the governor had, some of the CARES money, and other available funds to offset some of the shortfalls, but they anticipate that we will in all likelihood have to, well, they may transfer or sweep our fund, which is up at the $4 million level, to offset some of the shortfall. And then if things still don't look good, they may have to consider furloughs, layoffs, and other things further down the line. So their plan is to use CARES money, the rainy day fund, which they say they cannot use in its entirety because they need it for 3 years, transferring funds like our money in reserve, then furloughs, layoffs, and other cuts to forestall the state going bankrupt again. We won't know until sometime in October if our fund will be swept and what further plans they are making with regard to our money specifically and the state money more generally. And so they have encouraged us to work closely with our OSPB analysts. Patty and I met that nice young woman once, and we will provide more info as we obtain it. So I wanted you to know that, although our fund specifically is in good shape, as I reported in my report. We have still been providing the state-specific surveying exam. There are four individuals that took it
last week,
and four scheduled for August through October. And Dolly's been doing that to accommodate the use of this room and, you know, social distancing. So,
okay, is staff comfortable with it? I mean, is it working out for staff okay where they're not uncomfortable or in danger? Or?
This last exam, we had three individuals in the large room next to us and one individual in here. So we were very nice and spread out.
Okay.
And then I thought it was really good news. I included that over 8,800 people read, or at least looked at our newsletter last month. So that's pretty cool.
Out of what, 36,000
registrants? Yeah, but
that's a good number.
It's
circulation of 8,000.
I thought everybody would come.
Well,
that is an incredible opening rate.
Yes, whether
for
you know
junk mail or however you want to call it, it's
right.
An incredible opening rate.
Right. Congrats. Right. So, and Kurt had good news about providing more new products online for our licensees and the public to access. So that came online last week, right, Kurt?
Correct.
Okay. So that includes like public records requests. Why don't you let the board know what else is available?
Well, the newest items that came up is people can now pay exam fees, mm-hmm. As well as enforcement costs with a credit card. Harlan indicated it's a great help to respondents to be able to use a credit card instead of the cash, basically, I think was what they had before. And now, as well as verifications can now be done, payment and form online.
Yeah. So that's really good news. Even though we don't have e-licensing, we are, you know, a little more techie than we were this time last year. And Rob has summarized a couple of trends and explanations from the licensing department. We currently have everybody cross-trained here, so you may notice there are fewer staff in our office because every other day they're teleworking. So like today, Ruby's here, Danielle's teleworking, and one of the ladies at the front is here and another is teleworking. So we're doing that to minimize exposure to COVID, but also maintain operational efficiency here in the office.
Andrew, every other day?
Andrew is teleworking as well, I think two days a week, Wednesdays and Fridays. So, and you know, staff and their managers have gone through all their tasks and the things that they can do at home, we're allowing them to do at home. For instance, licensing techs can answer phones. We have something called Jabber available on the laptops. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's connected to your office phone. So all their phone calls, they can return through their computer. So, you know, they're still up to date on all the calls and the emails. And like, for instance, Andrew scans all the financial assurance and various tasks that they have throughout the day, they can accommodate at least some of them through.
Why do you measure productivity?
Well, that's the thing. They sign in, and Rob is copied on all the emails that the licensing ladies and the renewal specialists work on. Why don't you also explain? You can do it better than me.
We were able to split up the work so that a lot of it can be done at home. Basically, whatever they're accomplishing here can be, we have it split. So, for example, the front person handles the physical checks, and then the person at home does all the online renewals.
So we're able to doing it.
What's that?
How do you know they're doing it? How do you just measure the productivity?
Well, our numbers are showing that. If you look at the licensing numbers, we're getting fewer renewals, but we're still getting them in all the categories, and the ladies are processing them.
We can see when things have come in and when they're completed. So if we see a drastic change, like if applications now take an extra 2 weeks to grant, then we're going to have an issue. But if we notice a 1 day or a 2 day, that's something I think I'm comfortable with. But if we start getting, the numbers start getting drastically different, but we can keep an eye on it. And as a manager, I'm here 4 days a week, so I am making sure the paper files are where they need to be. So we've tweaked it to kind of make more accountability. They time in, they time out, we check in on them. Mm-hmm.
So, otherwise, that's my report, unless you have questions on the figures I've included. I actually misspoke. We have gotten more renewals than last month, fewer applications, and we lost about 221 people registered over last month, and it may just be they didn't renew. Mm-hmm. So, but firms are pretty much the same. They fluctuate just around 5,900 every month, a little over, a little less. So,
what about the board composition? Did you talk about that?
I have not heard anything more on.
We have this big paragraph here.
Oh, I have not heard anything more other than what I included, which is that we can expect Peter Leeds will apply for one of the public positions. He's already a member of Home Inspector Committee and LNR. He would be a great board member and helpful on all the home inspector complaints. I know he has applied. We'll see if that application is successfully processed.
Well, so I have a question. Is there a, right now when we have a board comprised of technical members and a few autonomous public members or one public member, the presumption would be that the public member is somebody that's not a technical representative.
Correct.
When that flips.
Right.
Is there a bar from a technical registrant occupying a public
We asked position? Mary Williams, who is Scott's supervisor, and she said our statute doesn't prohibit that, which is why Mr. Leeds has applied. So I had initially gotten a request from the woman who runs the Association for the Alarm Industry about whether an alarm person could apply who was also a contractor. And so I asked Mary, and she said there's no bar, so that's why I think Mr. Leeds determined he would apply as well. So, you know.
So I could apply as a public.
You could. Yeah, good luck. You and your border stuff. So, yes, and we are still waiting on a more formal, I don't want to call it a formal AG opinion because it wouldn't be, but legal advice regarding the continuation of board members whose positions are not being changed and whether they can continue to serve until someone replaces them. And hopefully you guys will have that for us by next month. So the statute, as you know, becomes effective on August 25th. So, and that's all.
All righty.
Okay.
Any questions for Melissa? Hearing none, we'll move on to future board meetings. We have August 2020.
Mr. Chair, I'm only available starting at 10 that day. I don't know if that's a possible adjustment we can make, or I can just join at 10.
That's fine. The after party will be held at the Jones Architects Studio, so you should be able to make it there.
That's on a Thursday, right? 9 o'clock.
Yeah, what day is that meeting? August 20th?
August 20th, and...
It should be a Thursday.
It is a Thursday.
Okay, I haven't received that invite yet.
I haven't created a Google invite for that, but we did vote on it at a previous board meeting.
Oh, you may have left the previous meeting before they voted, Clarence.
Yep, probably. That's good for me. Okay.
Will it work for you?
Yes, it does.
Excellent.
You know what? It's not on my calendar either. You said you haven't sent the call-in information or the...
Well,
the
invite. I don't send the Google invite until the month of. I don't do it. Okay. And it was on the website the very day that it was voted upon. I guess just presumed that you guys voted it, and that was that.
And at Mr. Noel's request, we will have carrot cake here in the office for those of you interested in appearing.
Right, I'm there.
We could take it to Neil's
house. I'm coming in.
Okay, so we got 2020 on that. Suggest the topics for future meeting agenda.
Well, we're going to look at the budget, so you can all vote on that before Patty and I submit it. That'll be fun. And hopefully we'll have the AG advice regarding board composition and how we continue to do our work. Okay. And anything else you want us to discuss, just let us know. Okay?
Okay. Well, with that, I
have
one item for the good of the order here, and that is if life hands you melons, you might be dyslexic. With that, I'm going to adjourn the meeting.
Before we adjourn, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to ask the question. There will be no overlap then between the old board and the new board. There will just be a clean break, and they will move forward with activities after August 25th, which is our official legislative end date.
Yeah, we don't know, Gene. It's not on the agenda yet, so we'll let you know.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Have a good month.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.